He was 6'03". Dale Stevens is listening in. Hey, Dale, it's good to have you back, man. Tēnā koe.
Morning, Eho. It's nice to be back and nice to hear Kyle on the radio as well. Ka pai. Yeah.
You still standing for the Nats, man?
Yes, yes, Christchurch Central. I was confirmed about, 8 weeks ago, I guess. Still very busy in the city anyway, so it's just really an extension of what I've been doing for the last few years.
Tēnā koe. Why didn't you aim to represent the Māori Party?
It's not really my value set at the moment, to be fair. And I've had many conversations with Te Uruoa over the years. And we both kind of agree on the same thing, that you need to have good Māori representation across all of the political parties. The value set that I aspire to through the National Party sits comfortably with me, but I also see a real opportunity for us to promote Te Ao Māori and work across parties to make sure that we get as many opportunities for our people as we can throughout the political process. And as you know yourself, too often in politics people take sides purely because of the party they're in. I'd rather be taking the side of getting things that are good for our people.
Tēnā koe, Mihana, kia koe. I haven't spoken for a month or so. You've been crook, mate.
Look, I had a wee off. I fell over and broke 10 ribs. It wasn't my best move. So it's cut out my dance foot moves for a while, but I'm getting better, and I'm not back on the horse, but I'm certainly back to relative normality.
Tēnā koe, that's a lot of ribs to break, mate. I couldn't laugh, yeah. Couldn't cough. Yeah. It's a very
couldn't
debilitating.
Do any of that, no, I'd say very quiet few weeks doing and learning how to breathe again. To be fair.
Wow. Yeah. Tough one, all right. I'm pleased you're back on the. On the horses, the saying goes. Thank you. Obviously, just picking up since last we spoke about the Māori tourism sector, you went to Colombia and Ecuador. I don't know if I've spoken to you about that, but maybe an update on just the Māori tourism sector. Obviously, you could still read and work a computer, even though you couldn't get around to events as such as you've recuperated. What can you share with us? Just bring us up to speed with what's happening in your space, please, Dale.
Yeah, so the monthly arrivals for the tourism sector in general continue to grow. And my understanding is that if we continue our current trends, we'll be at literally 100% of pre-COVID numbers by the end of the year. And that will probably coincide with the tourism sector in general moving back into the number one spot as a GDP earner for the country. But what we have seen, still a great uptick in visitors from Australia. About the same from China. Visitors from USA are going up. Visitors from the UK are going up. So we are still attracting a lot of attention, but I always have to preface that by saying that just on 60% of our revenue derived for our whānau in the regions is from domestic tourism. And I think that's a really important thing to notice, because we still have a great opportunity to spread ahurea Māori, reo Māori, tikanga across our domestic whānau and get them much more aligned with the Māori world. And I think that's a really great opportunity. But in general terms, yeah, we're seeing tourism is continuing to grow. Our tourism operators in the region are continuing to get more opportunities. The last year's tourism awards were a great showcase of Māori tourism, with 6 awards, and we're seeing that reflected in, I guess, increased interest in attending to specific Māori ventures around the country, which is great news.
Yeah, tēnā koe. Just I know that the situation with China is a delicate one at the moment. Here we are being critical of them launching missiles in our region, which is obviously understandable. They're our major trading partner. They are a significant block of income through tourism, inbound tourism. Are there any threats here with geopolitical issues and commentary from us? Is it an area where you think we have to be a little bit delicate? Because is there any likelihood, if they get hoo-ha with us, just sort of cutting off that bank of visitors that our tourism sector relies so heavily on?
It's the implications are potentially, and I say potentially carefully, wider than just tourism. I know from working in the export sector for many years with New Zealand Trade and Enterprise that we have a lot of export product goes into China. And for many years, we were very careful to advise our Māori exporters not simply to rely on that one market, because if that one market stopped for whatever reason, then our Māori exporters would lose majority of their international revenue overnight, literally. And unfortunately, that was proven to be the exact case when COVID came along, and we had some of our Māori exporters who really suffered because they had literally 100% of export product going into one market that closed down. So, you know, one of the things I talk a lot about is spreading the risk. And you can do that with tourism as well. Make sure that you are targeting other countries as well, so that the heavy reliance that we have at the moment on any one particular market is mitigated. Now, I just said before, our heavy reliance is on Australia, by far, literally twice the rest of the market. But we can't ignore the likes of China, USA, UK, and actually India is starting to come to the fore as well. Now, that will enhance with the free trade agreement and, of course, Prime Minister Modi's visit this week. But we can't be too careful with how we deal with China. My advice has always been, absolutely, use China as a market for inbound tourists. Use China as a market for export products. But don't let them be the only market, because if things go south, then our businesses will suffer. So there's got to be that sharing of risk across a number of markets.
Okay, let's talk about hospitality and its role within the tourism sector. Restaurant closures reaching a level the industry has never seen before, but at the same time, we've got Michelin stars being bestowed on some of our high-end restaurants. Is there a risk that only a small number of high-end venues benefit with Michelin stars, if you will, while the wider sector is continuing to struggle?
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at what's happened in other countries around the world with the onboarding, I guess, of the Michelin star program. It's generally resulted in a 3 to 8% lift in tourism value for that particular country, and I'm talking about countries of a similar size to us, Singapore, Vietnam, places that are geographically reasonably similar. But I've seen some quite conservative modelling for what potential there is for the Michelin star program in New Zealand, and the interesting thing is that it's worth between $150 and $300 million a year to New Zealand in terms of growth of GDP. Half of that is from non-Michelin star restaurant revenue. So we see that, yes, there's direct revenue increase for the restaurant sector because of the Michelin star program, but we're seeing a lot of uplift in other areas like accommodation, tourism experiences, transport, events, use of venues. So the interesting thing that I find is that, and I'm not one of them, so there is a great quantum of the international tourism sector that are food travellers, or food motivated travellers. And these are people who travel to countries to look at and enjoy cuisine, whereas, you know, I go look at sports events and beaches and indigenous events. But these people who are food motivated travellers spend about, in New Zealand dollars, about $800 more per trip at their destination. So if these people are rising by between 3 to 8% coming into New Zealand, bring an extra $800 per person in. Half of that is on the dining side, half of that is on related tourism type activities, then that gives a benefit potentially to all of us. And I know, for example, that Inati here in Christchurch, which received a star, they received, I think it was something like 200 bookings in the first 90 minutes after they were announced, and their forward bookings in total have gone up 50% in the, what, is it 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks since it was announced? So then you look at those people coming in and the related spend around our city, then that's got to be good for more than just the hospitality sector.
Yeah, which brings us to Te Kaha. We've seen some wonderful gains, but, I mean, everybody has just been so buoyant about the fact that it's so accessible to the strip, if you will, with their restaurants, yes, bars, accommodation. Yes. It's really breathed some new life into Ōtautahi's main centre. You and I have gauged its construction because you live so close by. Even when you were talking about it all those years, mate, I didn't realise just how close into town it was, you know, in walking distance. But what are you reading into its boost to the Christchurch economy? And I know it costs a lot to build, but perhaps in time it might recoup that spend just on the amount of traffic that it attracts to the city, not just to see the games, but the ACOM, the hospitality, etc. What's been most satisfying for you as you watched it open and now being utilised?
Yeah. Well, look, the details that came out of Christchurch NZ, which is the marketing arm of the City Council, showed that the first 60 days that the venue was open, that was up to just before the Warriors game in Christchurch, $21 million was pumped into the local economy through events at the new stadium. Since then, of course, we've had the Warriors, we've had obviously the Test match last week. So these are putting big numbers together, and I spoke to a good friend of mine, Mike Pekaski, who was actually the developer that set up a place called Little High, and then Riverside with some other property investors. And he was saying, and he's travelled the world looking at how to increase, I guess, entertainment and hospitality opportunities for Christchurch. And the advent of the stadium being so close to the city and the ability to simply walk all around the city, everybody is winning from having such accessibility. And he said it's the best he's seen anywhere in the world with the possible. He did say that Cardiff was pretty close. But the fact that it's a covered stadium permanently and so close, everybody wins. I know our tourism operators, our local Māori operators, they're getting a huge uptick in people wanting to just engage, but they don't just come to town for the night for a game. They come for the weekend. They bring the family. They bring, you know, mum and dad might bring a couple of kids, and they want to experience Christchurch when they're there, and not just for the sport, but all the other elements.
Yeah, I enjoyed Riverside when I was in Christchurch too, that precinct that your mate has developed as well. What about the summer? I know that we're big on our winter sports, and you've mentioned the Warriors, the Test match, etc. But some might say that the venue may become underutilised. How might we ensure that it continues to pump Pūtea into the market as best as it can?
Yeah, look, if you're just looking at events like rugby games, rugby league games, that doesn't tell the full story, of course. I went for a tour through there with one of the organisations that I'm on the board of, and we're talking to the managers of the venue who are talking about the number of conferences, because they've got huge conference facility potential within there, and the number of bookings they've got for that. Of course, you don't see that played out on Sky Sport. But, you know, week-to-week conferences in their big catering facilities, they've got plans in place for quite a number of concerts to be announced over the next few months, from summer right back through to winter. And this would be one that's dear to your heart, Dale. There is a move afoot, obviously, to try and bring the 20th NRL team into Christchurch and base it here. So you imagine having an NRL team using Te Kaha as its home stadium. Be awesome.
Well, you might have to get those people in the National Party to put some boots here in. The National Rugby League, sponsored by... Anyway, the thoughts are there. I'm sure there's plenty going on. Hey, good catching up with you again. Yeah. I'm pleased that you've recovered. All the best to you and your beautiful fams, man, for Matariki. What are your plans?
Well, actually, I'm going up to Kaitaia in about 3 hours. I'm heading up there. I've got a little bit of time with the whānau up there, but then I'm back for Matariki here in Christchurch. A number of events on, and we've got a big family event, so always looking forward to catch up with. We've got so many little people arriving in our family. It's great to get them all together.
How many you got?
Well, we've got we've got 3.5 of our own grandchildren, but then brothers and sisters-in-law, they're literally multiplying as we speak. I think we've got something like maybe 15 or 16 little ones under 5.
Wow, to so, start up the Stevens Preschool or Koha. Good luck to you, mate.
That's right.
Thanks, lovely to talk again. All the best, eh?
All right, ka kite e ho.
Thanks, Dale.